Greetings, everyone. Thank you for joining us for today's Business Forecast and Partner Update webinar. My name is Matt Johnson. I am the Communications Director for USAID's Office of Acquisition Assistance, as well as the agency's industry liaison. We are so appreciative of you joining us for the webinar and partner update today. We have over 1,000 people that have registered to attend today's webinar, and I think it just highlights the importance of just our partnership with you, the importance of our business forecast, and just the updates that we want to share with you all today. This quarter, we received more questions than we ever have previously before as a part of our business forecast. I would say we typically receive around 60 to 70 pages of questions from our partner community. Last time I checked, without looking at actually the answers to questions, I think we were around 160, 170 pages worth of questions. And so we know that there's a lot of interest in our business forecast, and we want to use this call as an opportunity to kind of talk about some of the major trends, some of the major things that are happening at USAID. Now, if you're new to joining us for one of our business forecast webinars, rather than going through all 160 pages of questions we received, we're going to highlight some of the top-level updates, things that we saw, some trends that we saw in the questions that we received, as well as provide updates from things that are happening within the agency. We're pleased today that our Bureau for Policy Planning and Learning is joining us for today's webinar, and they will be providing updates on a number of policies and activities, such as the agency's Over the Horizon activities and new policies that are impacting our partners. And so, as I said, we won't be going through all the forecast questions that we have today, but we will be posting the responses to nearly all of the questions on our website later today, as well as a recording of this call and a transcript of this call. We'll notify our partners through our industry liaison newsletter, which we can drop in the chat box in a second. If you're not already signed up for it, you can sign up for our newsletter there. We'll also be sending out a message through our Twitter handle at USAID BizOps once we've had a chance to get everything posted. And so a little bit of a script for the webinar today. You'll hear from a number of folks, both from the Management Bureau's Office of Acquisition and Assistance, as well as the Bureau for Policy Planning and Learning. And then we will go through about 10 or 15 questions that we received from our partners as a part of kind of a scripted Q&A during this. We won't be taking any live Q&A during this webinar, although we'll try and answer any questions that do come up during this time. And so I want to briefly introduce all the different folks that you'll be hearing from during our webinar today, and I'll ask them just to introduce themselves again as well once they get a chance to talk. But first, you'll hear from Mark Walther. Mark is the director of the Management Bureau's Office of Acquisition Assistance, as well as the agency's senior procurement executive. You'll hear from Deb Roderick. Deb is a deputy director in our Office of Acquisition Assistance. You'll hear from Randy Tift, who is the chief acquisition and assistance policy officer in the Office of Acquisition Assistance, as well as Tanisha Alston, who is our small business goaling manager in USAID's Office of Small and Disadvantaged Business Utilization, as well as Maureen Choquette, who's the Senior Deputy Assistant Administrator for the Bureau for Policy Planning and Learning, Tracy Quilter, who's the Deputy Director, is the Deputy Director in our Office of Strategic and Program Planning in our Bureau for Policy Planning and Learning, as well as Julie Lelick, who's a Policy Analyst in our Office of Policy in the Bureau of Policy Planning and Learning. And so we've got an exciting agenda today with lots of things to discuss, and with that, I want to turn it over to Mark to provide some introductory remarks. Over to you, Mark. Thanks.
Many thanks, Matt, and I appreciate each and every one of you joining our call today. We very much appreciate these opportunities to conduct these outreach sessions, and we know how vital and important they are to you and to us as well, and all the work you're doing to make our development programs impactful around the world. I'd also like to give a special thanks as well, as Matt highlighted, to our PPL colleagues, Maureen, Tracy, and Julie, for joining us today. We've been looking for additional cross-cutting activities where we can give a broader A&A perspective, including programmatic areas, and it's a pleasure to have them join us, along with all our normal MOA leadership colleagues. So many thanks again. So turning a little bit to the numbers on the fiscal year end, we had a record-breaking year in acquisition and assistance with $21.4 billion in obligations worldwide. That clearly far exceeds the billion numbers versus million last year. And it's been a record-breaking year, obviously, and COVID-19 supplemental funds naturally played a significant role in that as well. In regard to the breakdown of funding, about $15 billion was obligated in Washington, and a little over $6 billion was obligated in our field missions. While those obligations occur in different operating units, naturally, they all focus on programs being implemented in our overseas environment. Finally, we continue to have consistent breakdowns in acquisition compared to assistance, with about $6.2 billion obligated in contracts, and about $5.1 billion in cooperative agreements, and about $10 billion in grants. Just the two additional points on the assistance and acquisition data points. On the assistance side, grants and cooperative agreements, about half of the $15 billion total reflects obligations to non-government organizations, and the other half reflects obligations to public international organizations, multilateral organizations. In regard to the contract side, just two other data points, roughly about $3 billion of our obligations under contracts are through our agency indefinite quantity, indefinite delivery contracts, or IDIQs, and about 600 plus million in regards to blanket purchase agreement calls, GSA task orders, and other federal orders. So just to keep that in mind on how these numbers further break out. And we're going to do our, working diligently on our year-end review, and we'll be highlighting all these numbers in much more detail in that annual publication. So we appreciate that. It was also a significant year in U.S. small business accomplishments, and I know Tanisha will share out the successes in that area. And we also had success in category management that Deb Broderick has been leading, and she'll provide more details on that area. And then thirdly, our other agency priority goal, co-creation collaborative approaches, also was successful in increasing those techniques and opportunities as well. So it's especially rewarding that we have a number of accomplishments and successes across the board. We realize that COVID-19 has had a major impact on you and the work we do around the world. We continue to focus on areas that come up, be it the essential medical supplies or personal protective equipment updates or any of the frequently asked question areas that come in. While the volume of questions has been significantly reduced from the peak times in March and early summer, we continue to want to engage you on these efforts, and we'll be doing further outreach, especially as you return to more engagement in overseas environments, along with our Foreign Service contracting and agreement officers and other foreign staff, given that the end of the global authorized departure has occurred, and we have been asking individuals and requesting individuals to return to post by December 9th. We will want to do a pulse taking at the beginning of the new calendar year to determine how things are going, the impediments and challenges that still exist in different operating environments, and we will welcome your further insights in those particular areas. On another note, obviously, the National Defense Authorization Act, Section 889, has been an active area. While the COVID-related questions have decreased, there have been rapid increase in Q&As in this particular area on prohibited technologies, the representation processes and the waivers that are available and or being pursued, and how the agency processes those requests. We've been, and I'm especially thankful to Deb Broderick on her leadership in this area of Section 889, along with our general counsel colleagues and along with our MCIO colleagues. It's been quite an effort, and my hat's off to them for all they've accomplished in trying to put in processes and procedures in these areas. And we will continue to update you as we move forward. Finally, another major update, you know, is our agency's business forecast. We take great pride and appreciation for all the advancements we try to continue to make in the business forecast and these quarterly outreach calls and all the techniques and technology advancements. There were a number of fields we activated at the beginning of this fiscal year, the one dealing with an acquisition and assistance plan ID number to help track activities throughout the year more appropriately. In conjunction with that, we will be introducing in the beginning of the calendar year a change log that will also help tracking an effort throughout the process so you know where changes was made and any alteration in approaches throughout the solicitation procurement process. Category management is another area where we're added a feature to be able to identify that. Co-creation as well is an area that we are highlighting in addition, knowing that co-creation and category management are both agency priority goals. We also added a feature of eligibility criteria that if there is any limitation to a particular subset of eligibility, that we will try to highlight that as well. And then also finally adding the principal geographic code, the country and or region associated with the particular procurement. I know Randy will be highlighting a number of areas on effective partnering and procurement reform, as well as the new partnerships initiative. We've made particular inroads in regard to our Foreign Service contracting officers and rebuilding that cadre. We have a number of individuals that will be continuing to enter on board in that field, and we've also continued very active recruitment here in Washington on our contracting and agreement officers as well. And we look forward as they join the agency and get acclimated to our development mission here in Washington and overseas. And we will continue to look forward to our reform efforts throughout the upcoming months and upcoming years and the enactment and of the acquisition and assistance strategy that guides that process and the various reform recommendations that we continue to implement week in and week out on a number of different areas across the agency. Again, many thanks to each and every one of you for joining us. And with that, I'll turn it over to Deb Broderick. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. And good morning, everyone. I'm Deb Broderick. I'm the Deputy Director in MOAA. And one of my responsibilities is category management, and I want to thank you for all the efforts that you've helped us achieve this year in our category management goals. USAID achieved both the spend under management and the best in class targets, which of course made us very happy as this is an agency priority goal and we'd like to achieve those to the best of our abilities, and we appreciate your help. So I want to remind everyone that category management is a U.S. government-wide initiative. It's not unique to USAID, and I would encourage you to read OMB Memo 1913 to understand all the terms and the ways in which category management is used and how it can help you and help us, to include the definitions for SOM and BIC and the different tiers, and why it's so critically important to our agency as well as other agencies. I've provided a link in the memo, in the written questions and answers to this memo. The best-in-class contract vehicle that USAID is most likely to use for professional services is the GSA OASIS IDIQ, both the restricted and the unrestricted pieces. So we would encourage you to visit the OASIS site for more information, and I also provide a link in the question and answers for the GSA list of best-in-class vehicles. Many of our implementing partners have noticed that there are new fields and drop-down menu choices as they relate to category management. These two fields are award slash action type and category management contract vehicle. So under the award slash action type, there are several choices. One of them is a standalone contract, which refers to a C contract, basically using FAR Part 15. Second one is the GSA order, which is under FAR Part 8, and it refers to orders from the multiple award schedule. And the third option would be other federal order, which is referring to FAR Part 16, and it refers to task orders issued under IDIQs from other federal agencies, such as GSA, OASIS, IDIQ, and HCATS, all of those, any other federal agency. And then finally, there's the USAID IDIQ task order, and this refers to a task order issued under USAID, also using FAR Part 16. So the second drop-down category is going to be, the second field with drop-down categories is going to be the category management contract vehicle. And in this case, the CO must enter the name of the category management vehicle that they intend to use for the procurement, such as the GSA order, the multiple award schedule, or the other federal IDIQs, such as OASIS or HCATS, so forth. So those are the new fields that we have that you'll notice on the forecast. And then also, as with every year, OMB has set new targets for fiscal year 21. And since we achieved our targets last year, this year we're not going up by that much. So that's a good thing for us. And we will put those out. Actually, they're available on the GSA, on the OMB website. But we'll also put those on our website as well. And you'll be seeing more more awards moving in that direction in the forecast in the future. So I want to thank you for your engagement and for our success and your help. And now I'll turn it over to Randy Tift.
Thank you, Deb. Good morning, everybody. So over the past several months, the Effective Partnering and Procurement Reform Initiative, EPPR, has made great progress toward achieving several key priority actions in the EPPR recommendations package that was approved for action last year. Based on the acquisition and assistance strategy, the agency has now established three new indicators as part of its other agency priority goal in the state USAID joint strategic plan. Starting with FY21, we will measure the increased use of new and underutilized partners at both prime and subaward levels. Missions set targets for this metric, along with metrics for strengthening the capacity of local partner organizations, which we established in 2019, and increasing the use of co-creation, a goal we established in 2018, through the new Partnerships Initiative action plans this year. So those metrics were implemented through the NPI action plans. And these three objectives, engaging new and underutilized partners, capacity building, and co-creation, USAID will measure effective subaward practices, not only prime awards, for the first time. Mission targets for all three metrics are based on country strategies and local context. So please look for the agency's FY20 Q4 report and FY21 plan for this agency priority goal on the OMB website soon. The Acquisition and Assistance Labs, the ANA Labs, have expanded their work supporting innovation. We released a co-creation field guide designed to clarify and dispel myths around co-creation. This co-creation guide is available on USAID.gov under a new co-creation webpage. More field guides will be issued in the next year addressing other key ANA objectives. Over the summer, we also released a mandatory reference on the use of broad agency announcements, BAAs, providing guidance and clarification on issues like using BAAs for research and development, protecting intellectual property, et cetera. And we welcome your feedback on all these new resources on co-creation. In October, the EPPR team convened a workshop of nearly 100 representatives from prime and subaward organizations for a discussion on the strategic use of subawards and the importance of complying with subaward reporting requirements. To emphasize this importance, the acting deputy administrator issued notices on existing requirements for subaward and subcontract approvals and reporting to both our staff and our partners. He also asked to update those subaward and the reporting of subawards and subcontracts on the FSRS database by November 30th. The new partnerships initiative had a successful year in FY20. The goal of NPI is to multiply USAID's development impact by elevating local leadership, fostering creativity and innovation, and mobilizing resources across the agency's programs. To date, USAID has made 29 awards valued at over $400 million and is working with almost 60 organizations through NPI. A number of other USAID activities are operating based on NPI objectives, targeting new and local partners, using co-creation, including designing sub-awards using co-creation, and strengthening local capacity as a component of an increasing number of awards across all sectors. Missions and overseas operating units have completed their two-year NPI action plans. The NPI action plans are roadmaps for over 100 countries to expand agency engagement with new and local partners in numerous ways, particularly with an emphasis on co-creation and capacity building. In FY21, missions anticipate launching more than 500 NPI or NPI-aligned activities globally, and nearly half of all activity designs will incorporate co-creation, a significant increase in the use of co-creation in just 2 years since we set our agency priority goal in that area. So beyond just NPI awards, we would highlight that we are seeing the principles of the ANA strategy and NPI in many of our new awards. For example, the recently awarded monitoring and evaluation activity, a global buy-in mechanism, prioritized including new U.S. small business. This 100% business contract with a five-year ceiling of $655 million awarded to 19 small businesses was awarded to 19 small businesses, four of which are new to USAID. Recently, the Deputy Acting Administrator, released an executive message on expanding the use of phased acquisition. This is a long-sought goal under EPPR. We hope that the use of phased acquisition in a variety of ways will be used to lower barriers to entry and in contract solicitations and potentially speed up acquisition. One of our ANA strategy guiding principles that gets less attention is enabling and equipping the workforce. So we're excited to announce assignments to new positions created based on EPPR recommendations. In MOAA, we now have a lead for strategy and a lead for engagement. We're also excited to announce that new senior regional advisors will serve the bureaus for Africa, Middle East, and Asia. These senior contracting officers provide guidance to the senior leaders, including the assistant administrators in those bureaus. They encourage the use of innovative ANA approaches across their region, and they coach and support professional development of the COs and AOs in their regions. Adaptive management remains a high priority as we implement EPPR-driven revisions to ADS 303 from a year ago, and we're moving to expand the use of the changes clause through revisions to ADS 302 with training and support for COs in that area. So these changes under both acquisition and assistance will encourage greater adaptive management, which, as we know, is critical in this time of the COVID-19 response and beyond. So keep your eyes open to these and other EPPR announcements coming soon, including the second iteration of the ANA strategy and updates on the development of USAID's first ever local capacity development policy. Thank you, and I believe I'll hand to Tanisha Alston, my colleague from OSDBU.
Thank you, Randy. First, I'd like to thank Matt and Mark Walther for providing us the opportunity to share OSDBU plans for the next year and what has taken place over the last 3 months. First, many may be aware that Mauricio Vera, the director of the OSDBU for approximately 13 years, retired in October, this past October. The agency will identify Mr. Vera's successor in due time. In the interim, we have two newly appointed deputy directors managing the small business program. The deputy directors are Jamela Payton and John Watson. For 11 years, Ms. Payton served as the senior contracting official for USAID Office of Acquisition and Assistance, Washington and Foreign Service Operations. Mr. Watson has been a member of the OSBU team for the past 5 years, serving as the agency's Minority Serving Institutions Coordinator. I should also point out that Mr. Watson also will serve as the acting director until the agency has identified a permanent replacement for Mr. Vera. With the onboarding of these new deputy directors, the OSBU has been restructured to better serve our internal and external stakeholders. Our mission, to advocate the use of small businesses to maximum practical extent, remains the same. Despite the changes in 2020, I am pleased to announce that the preliminary data indicates the agency surpassed its previous small business contract obligations for fiscal year 2019 by more than $80 million. Our accomplishment of approximately 13.65 for prime awards significantly exceeded our official small business goal of 12%. And I should also note that the dollar obligations to small businesses was approximately $845 million, one of the highest dollar obligations we've achieved to date. USAID exceeded its goal for the prime contract obligations also in the women-owned small business area. We awarded approximately $330 million, which also exceeded the 5% goal. We also exceeded the small disadvantaged business goal for the 10th consecutive fiscal year by awarding approximately $410 million. And we also made notable increases for small business awards to historically underutilized business zones, as well as service-disabled veteran-owned small businesses. Concerning the hub zones, we awarded approximately $40 million, which is $8 million above what we awarded in 2019. For the service-disabled veteran small businesses, we awarded approximately $30 million, which is $9 million above what we awarded in fiscal year 19. So that's quite an accomplishment. I serve as the small business goaling manager for the agency, so I can sincerely state that we can attribute our success to the excellent collaborative spirit of our Washington and Mission staff. Their support for the small business program was essential in identifying prime contract opportunities worldwide for U.S. small businesses. So on behalf of the small business team, I'd like to say thank you to all of them. In anticipation of the changing landscape, the OSBU created an online training module for the Washington and field operations staff, which we will launch in March 2021. This training is different because it serves as a temporary substitute for the full one-day training session that we offered to acquisition and program officials worldwide. In addition, we have hosted several virtual outreach activities to maintain continuity of small business partnership engagement. The next activity, I want to make sure that everyone is aware, the next activity is scheduled for December 8th. The agency will co-host an outreach activity with the U.S. Women's Chamber of Commerce to increase our cadre of women-owned small business partners. I also wish to thank many partners and soon-to-be partners who have reached out to the OSBU to share their experiences and to confirm their interest in working with the agency. Please continue to review the agency's business forecast, as well as the regional and country development cooperation strategies to learn how your firm can support the agency's development objectives. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Maureen. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Hello, everyone. Mark, Deb, and Matt, thanks so much for inviting PPL to join this call today. I'm joined by a few of my colleagues from the Bureau of Policy Planning and Learning, and we're pleased to share some updates with you today. First, we'll hear from Tracy Quilter on our mission-level strategic planning process, our country development cooperation strategies, the CDCSs. Tracy will also provide an update on the ADS Chapter 201, which governs USAID's program cycle. Then Julie Lawick from the Policy Office will give an overview of Over the Horizon, the strategic review process, which is an exercise that is helping to position USAID for a world altered by COVID-19. We hope these updates are helpful to you, and we appreciate the opportunity to be with you all today. I'll turn it over to Tracy.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Maureen. I am very thankful to be here today with all of you. Related to our Country Development Cooperation Strategies, or CDCSs, PPL has continued working toward our target dates for completion of the strategies. As we near the end of 2020, we are forging ahead with strategy development. We've been providing virtual support to our missions, from workshops to document review, while navigating this new normal to continue supporting our missions as they work through the phases of CDCS development. I'm pleased to be able to report that we have 32 CDCSs approved as of November 16th, and we are diligently working with the remainder of the missions to be able to meet our targets. We expect an additional 16 CDCSs and 5 RDCSs, which are the regional strategies. They are in process, and most are in their very final stages. For our ADS 201 revisions to projects and activities, USAID revised ADS 201, which is our program cycle operational policy, at the end of October, following an extensive revision in December of 2019. These revisions better incorporate the journey to self-reliance in the program cycle processes by enhancing the agency's ability to better achieve development outcomes while streamlining strategic planning to design and ultimately implementation. The biggest change is that projects are now optional, and missions that choose to use projects will no longer complete project design plans or project appraisal documents. Rather, we have introduced a new streamlined project development document template that is up to a 15-page maximum. USAID's activity design requirements have also changed. They are now harmonized and processes are standardized for improved efficiency and effectiveness in programming. These changes can all be found online at usaid.gov in the ADS Chapter 201. Thank you very much.
Great. So I'll jump in to talk about Over the Horizon. Again, my name is Julie and I'm in the Policy Office, but Over the Horizon was really a cross-agency effort. So while coming to you from PPL, we had great inputs from across USAID. So first, a bit of what is Over the Horizon and why did we do this? So Over the Horizon is in response to COVID-19, but we're looking towards the medium and long-term impacts of the pandemic. So soon after the pandemic hit, we were responding to the health crisis, but we realized that COVID was so much more than that, and it was going to affect the people and the places where USAID and our partners work on the development and humanitarian side, and that there would be shifts to our foreign policy and the national security landscape as well. So we wanted to be proactive and better position the agency for this world altered by COVID, and we wanted to look at the evolving development and humanitarian landscape. The goal is to produce some actionable recommendations for the acting deputy administrator. So to produce those recommendations, we wanted to look at our policies, programs, and operations, and if they would need adaptation to ensure success in responding to the medium and long-term impacts from COVID. So we initiated Over the Horizon, this cross-agency team, to examine data and evidence and ground those recommendations in analysis. Our first task was a big one. So we wanted to understand the impacts of COVID, thinking beyond just the immediate health implications. And to do that, we wrote a landscape analysis paper grounded in research and evidence, and then we conducted a scenario planning exercise to anticipate future scenarios that are pretty likely and would have high impact on the work we do. Based on those two pieces of analysis, the landscape analysis and the scenario planning outputs, the Over the Horizon team developed three strategic objectives to guide the recommendations and the agency's response to the medium and long-term impacts of COVID. I'll quickly recite those three strategic objectives, or SOs. And the first one is to build resilience in countries that are increasingly fragile due to COVID. The second one is to respond to dramatic increases in food insecurity, poverty, and loss of educational gains in communities most impacted by COVID. And the third strategic objective is to strengthen public and private health systems that are under strain due to COVID in partner countries that are particularly critical to global health security. So once we did that, we were guided by those strategic objectives to develop a list of focus countries, so places that are particularly important to advancing a particular strategic objective. The focus countries identify areas that, given the impacts of COVID, both already felt and anticipated impacts of COVID, countries that are at the greatest nexus of need, humanitarian and development need, opportunity for impact, and national security importance to the U.S. So USAID missions in over-the-horizon focus countries will pivot programs and efforts to advance the strategic objective most relevant to them. They'll receive additional support from Washington in the form of technical expertise and staff time and effort to help advance the strategic objective as well. However, missions in the over-the-horizon focus countries won't be receiving additional funds. And on the flip side of this, nor will missions or programs in non-focus countries be losing funds. So the over-the-horizon focus country prioritization process may feed into future budget allocation processes, as the exercise was really grounded in data and evidence, and that's exactly the type of information we want to be infusing into existing processes. But at the moment, it's not resulting in in funding changes. After all that talk about the over-the-horizon focus countries, now is the part where I get to say the list is currently being finalized. And once it is final, which we hope is very soon, it will be put on USAID's public-facing website. So in the over-the-horizon process, after we did that analysis, we conducted the country prioritization process. Then we developed two sets of recommendations. The first set of recommendations directly support each strategic objective that I mentioned before, and they focus more on programmatic and technical changes to advance those particular strategic objectives. And the second set of recommendations are cross-cutting recommendations that help to provide the necessary operational support for USAID missions in over-the-horizon focus countries so that they can pivot their programs and that they can do their work differently to advance those SOs. That's where we're thinking more about procurement, staffing, and those types of cross-cutting operational support recommendations. All of the recommendations coming out of the over-the-horizon process have been approved by agency leadership, and we're beginning to work on implementation. The top level, or the highest short version of the recommendations, are included in the over-the-horizon snapshot, which is on our public-facing website, so you're welcome to review them there. And now I've mentioned a few different products, like the landscape analysis, the scenario planning exercise, and the recommendations. Those are all found on USAID's website, USAID.gov. There's an Over the Horizon page. So if you're interested in learning more, I'd encourage you to visit that webpage. And that is also where the focus countries will be posted when they're available. I'll leave it there and turn it back to Matt. Thanks so much for the chance to share our work.
Thank you, everyone. Thanks for all of those really helpful remarks. There's a lot of really good information in there. And so just wanted to share that we will be posting a recording of this on our business forecast website later today, and we will be notifying folks through our industry liaison email. So everything that we've talked about in the webinar today, you will have a chance to see again, both in the script as well as the recording of the webinar. So I want to turn over now to a handful of the business forecast questions that we received this last quarter, things that we thought that would be of general interest. So got a handful of questions for Mark, Maureen, Randy, Tanisha, and Deb as well. Mark, the first question for you, and I'm going to read off the questions that our partners submitted. So we understand that over 100 previously posted opportunities were removed from USAID's business forecast in early October due to a fiscal year glitch. Has USAID fully resolved this issue?
Thanks, Matt. Yes, I believe we're almost to final on resolving the issues that were identified as indicated in the question. There was a hiccup going from FY 2020 to FY 2021, given the two tools that we placed and updated in the business forecast. We've been actively working with our overseas and Washington operating units to restore all of them appropriately. You should be seeing that live throughout these time periods. And we appreciate your patience with this unexpected glitch. And we think we've remedied almost everything for at this point in time. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. This second question is for you as well. This is a question I've seen come up a number of times, a number of different forums. But so USAID seems to be moving away from the U.S. government mandated posting of solicitations on grants.gov and beta.sam.gov to use Twitter and newsletters. It's causing a lot of extra work to search and monitor. What can USAID do to bring back the use of central portals for posting solicitations?
Well, first, we definitely want to assure you that we're not moving away from the mandated central portals, grants.gov and betasam.gov, in publicizing new and existing procurement-related activities. That continues to be the requirement and focus. However, we do want to attract, both in the U.S. and overseas, new partners and do further reach out. So we use a variety of social media, newsletters, et cetera, to do that additional reach out. And we will be ensure that those continued reach out efforts always refer or link back to grants.gov or betasam.gov so that everything is in sync. But again, we utilize those portals and there's no movement away from them. It's more just amplification.
Thanks, Mark. Maureen, I have a question for you on the country development cooperation strategies. I know Tracy talked a little bit about this in her remarks, but USAID's plan for a second wave of country development cooperation strategies, or CDCSs, to be completed by December 2020. Could USAID please provide an update on the timing of the CDCS process and when the second wave of new CDCSs will be made public?
Sure. Well, thanks, Matt. So as Tracy mentioned, we're working really diligently on the CDCSs, which we're hoping to have completed by the end of December. The CDCSs launch began with the Wave 1 and Wave 2 countries, which took place between 2017 and 2019. And since then, all missions that were not exempt have began their CDCS development process. As of this month, we have 32 approved CDCSs, and we're diligently working with the remainder of the missions to submit their final strategies for approval before the end of the year. An additional 16 CDCSs and 5 regional development strategies are in process, and most are in the final stages. And I do want to say that the approved public version of our CDCSs are all available on the USAID.gov website. Back over to you, Matt.
Thank you, Maureen. Tanisha, next question is for you. USAID requires that prime contractors and prime grants with a subcontracting requirement, submit those to OSDBU 45 days in advance. What happens to this after they're submitted to OSDBU, and where can U.S. businesses find the posted solicitations?
Okay. Thank you, Matt. First, let me say that OSDBU's role is to help increase contracts and subcontracts to U.S.-based small businesses. We do not review grant opportunities. When the OSDBU receives a subcontracting plan relative to a contract, It makes sure that the plan conforms to the federal acquisition regulations, also referred to as FAR Part 19 requirements. So I would definitely recommend that those who would like more detail to take a look at that FAR Part 19. Small businesses may locate solicitations in the U.S. on the U.S. Small Business Administration subnet website. We'll provide a link with our response. It is not a marketing system. However, it serves as an opportunity for prime contractors to utilize the subnet to post opportunities for small businesses. Thank you.
Thanks, Tanisha. Deb, a clarifying question on category management for you. Does USAID consider IQCs or IDIQs as tier zero or tier one for category management purposes?
Sure, thanks, Matt. So category management tiers are defined by OMB, not by USAID. And you can find that in their memo 19-13. GSA has a category management resource page and a list of category management best-in-class tier three contracts on their website. A contract type does not put a contract into any one of the category management tiers. A contract, including an IDIQ, must be specifically designated as tier three, two, or one by OMB. An IDIQ, therefore, could be any of the tiers, or could be not aligned, which, so any of the tiers would be three, two, or one, three being the best, or not aligned, in which case it would be tier zero. Typically, we see that IDIQs are considered aligned, and generally at a two or a three level, but that's not guaranteed. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Deb. Mark, a question for you regarding grants under contracts. In the previous business forecast call, USAID mentioned that the grants under contract or GUC ceiling was going to increase to 500,000, or increase to 500,000 was under review. Can USAID provide the status of this action?
Sure, Matt. We have been diligently working and discussing the increase to the grants under contract threshold. It is part of the effective partnering and procurement reform effort. We're currently in consultations with OMB in regard to the potential increase to that threshold, and it is one of several action items on our EPPR efforts that are in the hopper in the months ahead to try to bring to fruition. We continue to, again, we meet weekly on effective partnering and procurement reform activities. We've been gaining over the last several months a number of them across the finish line, and there are a number of more in the hopper, so to say, in the coming weeks and months ahead as we continue to work across the a number of these recommendations. Thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Mark. Randy, a couple of questions for you related to MPI. Can you provide a list of MPI awards to include the awardee name, amount, and MPI partner category?
Thanks, Matt. So to date, as I mentioned, through MPI, we have formed 29 new partnerships with nearly 60 organizations, and those are valued at over $400 million. It's been a variety of sectors, including youth, higher education, the conflict prevention area, global health, a variety of types of awards, including direct to new and underutilized partners, but mentoring awards as well, where any partner may submit an application, compete by offering the best approach to mentoring new and local partners. And in a couple of cases, we've had very effective use of award types, fixed amount awards, et cetera, that have at sub-award level proven effective for partners less experienced in working with USAID, but effective as development actors. So all these awards issued under NPI are available on our website, including the awardee name, amount, partner category, a description of the activity. And I would encourage everybody on this webinar to take a look at usaid.gov/NPI. We also share information in the bi-monthly NPI newsletter on each of the new awards issued through this initiative. These updates include sharing of practices that are aligned with NPI and our ANA strategy, and include some that were not developed as NPI awards but are aligned with NPI objectives and ANA strategy. They reflect the shift of agency practices in diversifying partnerships, changing how we partner, such as using co-creation and capacity development under both acquisition and assistance.
Thanks, Randy. Next question for you related to MPI. Can you describe some of the types of solicitations that will be released in support of MPI in 2021?
So in the period since MPI was launched in May of 2019, it has so far tended to use solicitations such as an APS and addendum to APS. There have also been several BAAs used. But NPI is not restricted to this procurement modality, and missions may choose and very much plan to choose a variety of options as they move forward on their NPI action plans. We are encouraging the principles of NPI to be incorporated into all awards as well, whether or not they're specific NPI awards. As a result, we're seeing a lot of opportunities for new and underutilized partners in many of USAID's more traditional awards. Experienced partners are taking on a more mentoring approach in implementing awards. In addition, over the past few months, as I said earlier, all 77 of USAID's missions and overseas units have completed their two-year NPI action plans. And again, these have identified a significant number of actions that will target new and underutilized partners, mentoring awards, and other new ways of working. So again, please stay up to date with the latest NPI information on usaid.gov/NPI. Potential partners out there, and I hope many of you are on this call, are encouraged to continue monitoring the business forecast, grants.gov, and betasam.gov for future opportunities.
Thanks, Randy. The next question for you, Mark, is related to co-creation. I know this has been talked a lot about by both you and Randy and others on the call, but notice that missions are increasingly using co-creation phases that require substantial resources from partners and their respective consortium members in advance of award. Would USCD encourage missions utilizing co-creation to be cognizant of resource constraints and plan with smaller groups or hold co-creation post-award?
Thanks, Matt. First, we appreciate all the feedback and input over these many months in these past 2 years on the co-creation process and the thoughts you have shared with us. We do recognize that it has to be well managed, well designed, and facilitated. It can involve substantial time, human capital, and financial resources. We continue to encourage missions as well as implementing partners to, you know, think through strategically about the co-creation process and the utilization of it. We emphasize this in our messaging on a regular basis, and it was part of the reason for the creation of the co-creation field guide, which is now posted publicly, that you can take a look at and read through in more detail. And we also encourage you to share your experiences at aalab@usaid.gov. It really is critical for us to continue to hear from you, to give a shout out when you have participated in the co-creation process that has worked extremely well. We'd welcome hearing that from you so that we can then amplify that. So thanks again, Matt.
Thanks, Mark. Randy, I've got a next three questions are for you, all related to the local capacity development strategy. So the first question is, what is USAID doing to ensure capacity of new and underutilized partners will meet USAID requirements for financial and performance management?
So we recognize USAID's compliance requirements can be cumbersome, and that's especially true for new and underutilized partners. So if the new and underutilized partner is a subaward recipient, we encourage the subawardee to work closely with the prime implementing partner for support on compliance and reporting requirements. Prime implementing partners are often the best position to mentor subaward recipients on learning how and what to report to USAID. And this is one of the reasons we have emphasized subawards as being more strategic in how we implement. We want increasingly for subaward partners that are well positioned to lead a country's journey to self-reliance to be leading in the implementation of the development objectives, and to receive that technical oversight and compliance support and capacity building from a prime award partner, often a traditional partner that's well positioned to provide it.
Thanks, Randy. More specifically, what areas of capacity are targeted most directly under NPI?
So as part of NPI, and this is envisioned, of course, in the ANA strategy as a whole, We are shifting our focus on local capacity development. Originally, and in some of the early efforts at local engagement over the past decade, we focused on the ability of an organization to receive and manage federal funding. And while that sort of capacity is important, the more important capacity development and the way we want to measure success is by the strengthened performance of local actors and local systems in achieving and sustaining demonstrable development results. We want to support those partners as development actors in their own right to achieve development results. So we're focused on the outcomes of that organization's development work. We're focused on their organizational performance. And in order to measure progress on that front, as I mentioned at the top of my remarks, we have implemented a new capacity building for local development indicator, CBLD-9. It's now on the foreign assistance framework of the State Department, and it's implemented across our agencies to support the improvement of organizational performance through capacity development. So several thousand organizations receiving capacity development assistance through programs of USAID all over the world will have the measure of their organizational performance over the coming year.
Thanks, Randy. And just the last question before we wrap up here is for you, Mark. It's related to virtual co-creation industry days. You know, given COVID environment, does USAID intend to host virtual industry days and co-creation events in fiscal year 2021?
Thanks, Matt. And of course, most definitely, we will continue to host virtual industry days throughout this upcoming fiscal year. Co-creation is one of our agency priority goals for which we report to agency leadership and OMB on our progress and the use. In addition, it's part of our ANA strategy and part of the new partnerships initiative. Naturally, we have a variety of reform efforts and agency priority goals that we will continue to advance and engage with you on. And we look forward to specific opportunities as well as more cross-cutting opportunities as we've had this morning. We do encourage you to sign up to our industry liaison newsletter for agency-wide events. Naturally, we continue to advocate you pay close attention to the business forecast in grants.gov and betasam.gov for the specific agency requirements. I would, as we close out, just my sincere thanks again for Maureen, Tracy, and Julie, our PPL colleagues, and joining us for the first time on this business forecast quarterly call. We really appreciated the additional programmatic areas and over the horizon and the CDCS's updates that they provided us here today. My deep appreciation to Deb, Randy, Tanisha, Matt, and Brittany for all their continued contributions as we work day in and day out on all our efforts across the board. And finally, to each and every one of you, our implementing partners, we just can't thank you enough. We love hearing from you. We welcome further engagements. And as you know, I think we've especially demonstrated we're kind of all in this together. And I think our relationships and our communications and our interactions have continued to increase during all these challenging times. And we welcome all these further engagements that are still ahead of us. So thank you, Matt, and over to you.
Thanks, Mark. And Maureen, do you want to offer any just closing comments before we wrap up for today?
Sure. Thanks, Matt. Well, I just want to voice my appreciation to OAA for including us. Our partner community should be seeing more visible signs of the internal coordination that's happening between PPL and OAA, as PPL is now the institutional home of the CORs and AORs. So we're collaborating very closely behind the scenes with OAA, and we look forward to these continued meetings together to be able to talk to you about initiatives that we're doing that impact the implementation of our programs. So thanks so much for the opportunities today. Take care.
Thanks, everyone, so much for joining us for today. Just as a reminder, we will be sharing out the recording of this event, as well as a transcript, and then all of our business forecast questions and answers later today. So I want to thank you again for joining us, and thanks to all of our speakers. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Bye.
Many thanks.